A grubby cloth cap lay on the pavement. On the pavement beside the cap, someone had written in damp chalk, "Please help this little doggy." Beside it sat a small dog. It was not cut out by nature to be a friendly little waggy-tailed dog, but it was making the effort. Whenever someone walked by, it sat upon its hind legs and whined pitifully. Something landed in the cap. It was a washer. The charitable pedestrian had only gone a few steps further along the road when he heard, "And I hope your legs fall off, mister." The man turned. The dog was watching him intently. "Woof," it said. He looked puzzled, shrugged, and then turned and walked on. "Yeah, bloody woof, woof," said the strange voice as he was about to turn the corner. A hand reached down and picked up the dog by the scruff of its neck. "Hello, Gaspard, I believe I've solved a little mystery." "Oh, no," the dog moaned. "That's not being a good dog, Gaspard," said Carrot, lifting the dog so they could meet eye to eye. All right, put me down, will you? This hurts, you know." "I need your help, Gaspard." "Not me, I don't help the watch. Nothing personal, but it doesn't do anything for my street cred." "I'm not talking about helping the watch, Gaspard. This is personal. I need your nose." Carrot lowered the dog to the pavement and rubbed his hand on his shirt. "Unfortunately, this means I need the rest of you as well, although, of course, I am aware that under that itchy exterior beats a heart of gold." "Really," said Gaspard, "nothing good starts with 'I need your help.' It's Angua." "Oh, dear. I want you to track her." "Ha! Not many dogs could track a werewolf, mister. They're cunning." "Go to the best, I always say," said Carrot. "Finest nose known to man or beast," said Gaspard, wrinkling it. "Where's she gone, then?" "To Oberwald, I think." Carrot moved fast. Gaspard's flight was hindered by the hand gripping his tail. "That's hundreds of miles away, and dog miles is 7 times longer. Not a chance." "Oh? All right, then. Silly of me to suggest it," said Carrot, letting go. "You're right, it's ridiculous." Gaspard turned, suddenly full of suspicion. "No, I didn't say it was ridiculous," he said. "I just said it was hundreds of miles away." "Yes, but you said you had no chance." "No, I said that you had no chance of getting me to do it." "Yeah, but the winter's coming on, and as you say, a werewolf is very hard to track, and on top of that, Angua's a copper. She'll work out that I'd use you, and she'll be covering her trail." Gaspard whined. "Look, mister, respect is hard to earn in this dog's town. If I'm not smelled around the lamppost for a couple of weeks, my stock is definitely in the gutter, right?" "Yes, yes, I understand. I'll make some other arrangements. Nervous Nigel's still around, isn't he?" "What? That spaniel? He couldn't smell his own bottom if you put it in front of him." "They say he's pretty good nasally." "And he whittles every time anyone looks at him," snapped Gaspard. "I heard he can smell a dead rat 2 miles away." "Yeah? Well, I can smell what colour it is." Carrot sighed. "Well, I've got no choice, I'm afraid. You can't do it, so I'll—" "I didn't say—" Gaspard stopped and then went on. "I'm going to do it, aren't I? I'm bloody well going to do it. You're going to trick me or blackmail me or whatever it takes, aren't you?"
"Yes."
"How do you manage to write, Gaspard?" "I holds the chalk in me mouth. Easy."
"You're a smart dog, I've always said so. The world's only talking dog, too."
"Lower your voice, lower your voice," said Gaspard, looking around. "Here. Oberwald's wolf country, innit?"
"Oh, yes. I could have been a wolf, you know."
"We're different parents, of course." Gaspard sniffed and looked furtively up and down the street again. "Steak?"
"Every night."
"Right." Sergeant Colon was a picture of misery drawn on a lumpy pavement in bad crayon on a wet day. He sat on a chair and occasionally glanced at the message that had just been delivered, as if hoping the words would somehow fade away.
"Bloody hell, Nobby," he moaned.
"There, there, Fred," said Nobby, currently a vision in organdy.
"I can't be promoted. I'm not an officer. I am base, common, and popular."
"I've always said that about you, Fred. You got common off to a treat."
"But it's writ down, Nobby. Look, his lordship signed it."
"Well, the way I see it, you got 3 choices, said Nobby.
"Yeah?"
"You can go back and tell him you're not doing it." The panic in Colon's face was replaced by glazed grey terror.
"Thank you very much, Nobby," he said bitterly. "Let me know if you've got any more suggestions like that, because I'll need to go and change my underwear."
"Or you could accept it and make such a cock-up of it that he takes it away from you."
"You're doing this on purpose, Nobby."
"Might be worth a try, Fred."
"Yeah, but the thing about cock-ups, Nobby, is that it's hard for you to be, you know, precise. You might think you're making a little cock-up, and then it blows up in your face, and it turns out to be, in fact, a big cock-up. And in those circumstances, Nobby, I'm sort of worried that what his lordship might take away from me wouldn't just be the job. I hope I don't have to draw you a picture."
"Good point, Fred."
"What I'm saying is, cock-ups is like... well, cock-ups is... well, the thing about cock-ups is you never know what size they're going to be."
"Well, Fred, the third choice is you putting up with it."
"That's not helpful, Nobby."
"It'll only be for a couple of weeks, and Mr. Vimes will be back."
"Yeah, but supposing he isn't. Nasty place, Uberwelt. I heard where it's a misery wrapped in an enema. That doesn't sound too good. You can fall down things. Then I'm stuck, right? I don't know how to do officering."
"No one knows how to do officering, Fred. That's why they're officers. If they knew anything, they'd be sergeants." Now Colon's face screwed up again in desperate thought. As a lifelong uniformed man, a three-striped peg that had found a three-striped hole very early in its career, he subscribed automatically and unthinkingly to the belief that officers as a class could not put their own trousers on without a map. He conscientiously excluded Vimes and Carrot from the list, elevating them to the rank of honorary sergeant. Nobby was watching him with an expression of combined concern, friendliness, and predatory intent.
"What shall I do, Nobby?"
"Well, Captain," said Nobby, and then he gave a little cough, "what officers mainly have to do, as you know, is sign things."
The door was knocked on and opened at the same time by a flustered constable.
"Sarge, Constable Shue says he really does need an officer down at Sonkey's factory."
"What, the rubber wally man?" said Colon. "Right, an officer, right. We'll be along."
"And that's Captain Colon," said Nobby quickly.
Yes, and that's Captain Colon, thank you very much," said Colon, adding, as his resolve stiffened, "and I'll thank you not forget it."
The constable stared at them, then stopped trying to understand.
"And there is a troll downstairs who insists on speaking to whoever's in charge."
"Can't Strong in the Arm deal with it?"
Is Sergeant Strong in the Arm still a sergeant?"
said the constable.
"Yes."
"Even unconscious?"
"What?"
"He's flat on the floor right now, Captain.
"What's the troll want?"
"Right now he wants to kill someone, but mainly I think he wants someone to take the clamp off of his foot."
Gaspard ran up and down, nose barely an inch from the ground. Carrot waited, holding his horse. It was a good one. Carrot hadn't spent a lot of his wages up until now. Finally the dog sat down and looked depressed.
"So, tell me about this wonderful nose the patrician's got, then," he said.
"Not a trace."
"You'd better get Veterinari down here if he's so good," said Gaspard. "What's the point of starting here? Worst place in the old city. It's the gate to the cattle market, am I right? Trying not to smell stuff is the trick here, is the point I'm making. There's ground instinct. If you wanted to get on the trail of somebody, this is the last place I'd start."
"Very good point," said Carrot carefully. "So what's the strongest smell heading hubwards?"
"Dung carts, of course. Yesterday. Always a big clear out of the pens first things Friday morning."
"You can follow the smell?"
Gaspard rolled his eyes.
"With my head in a bucket."
"Good, let's go."
"So," said Gaspard, as they began to leave the gate's bustle behind, "we're chasing this girl, right?"
"Yes."
"Just you?"
"Yes."
"Not like with dogs, then, where there might be 20 or 30?
"No."
"So we're not looking at a bucket of cold water here?"
"No."
Constable Shue saluted, but a little testily. He'd been waiting rather a long time.
"Afternoon, Sergeant."
"That's Captain," said Captain Colon. "See the pip on my shoulder, Reg?"
Reg looked closer.
"I thought it was bird doing, Sarge."
"That's Captain," said Colon automatically. "It's only chalk now, because I ain't got time to get it done properly," he said. "So don't be cheeky."
"What's up with Nobby?" said Reg.
Corporal Nobbs was holding a damp cloth over one eye.
"Bit of a contretemps with an illegally parked troll,"
said Captain Colon.
"Shows what kind of troll he was, striking a lady," muttered Nobby.
"But you ain't a lady, Nobby. You're just wearing your traffic-calming disguise."
"He wasn't to know."
"You'd got your helmet on. Anyway, you shouldn't have clamped him."
"He was parked, Fred."
"He'd been knocked down by a cart," said Captain Colon. "And that's Captain."
"Well, they always have excuses," said Nobby sullenly.
"You'd better show us the corpus, Ridge," said Colon.
The body in the cellar was duly inspected.
"And I remember Cheery saying there was a smell of cat's pee and sulphur at the Dwarf Bread Museum," said Reg.
"Certainly hangs about," said Colon. "You wouldn't have blocked sinuses if you worked here for a day."
"And I thought, I wonder if someone's tried to make a mould of the replica scone, sir," said Reg.
"Now that is clever," said Fred Colon. "You'd get the real one back then, wouldn't you?"
No, Sarge, Captain, but you'd get a copy of the replica."
"Would that be legal?"
"Can't say, sir. I wouldn't think so. It wouldn't fool a dwarf for 5 minutes."
"Then who'd want to kill him?"
"A father of 13 kids, maybe," said Nobby. "Ha ha!
"Nobby, will you stop pinching the merchandise?" said Colon. "And don't argue. I just saw you put a couple of dozen in your handbag." "That don't matter," rumbled the troll. "Mr. Sonkey always said they was free to the watch." "That was very civic of him," said Captain Colon. "Yeah, he said the last thing we wanted was more bloody coppers round the city."
A pigeon chose that diplomatic moment to flutter into the factory and land on Colon's shoulder, where it promoted him. Colon reached up, removed the message capsule, and unfolded the contents.
"It's from Visit," he said. "There's a clue, he says."
"What to?" said Nobby.
"Not to anything, Nobby, just a clue."
He took off his helmet and wiped his brow. This was what he'd hoped to avoid. In his heart of battered hearts, he suspected that Vimes and Carrot were good at putting clues next to other clues and thinking about them. That was their talent. He had others. Well, he was good with people, and he had a shiny breastplate, and he could sergeant in his sleep.
"All right, write up your report," he said. "Well done, we're going back to the yard."
"I can see this is going to get on top of me," said Colon as they walked away.
"There's paperwork, too. You know me and paperwork, Nobby."
"You're a very thorough reader, that's all, Fred," said Nobby. "I've seen you take ages over just one page, digesting it magisterially, I thought."
Colon brightened a little.
"Yes, that's what I do," he said.
"Even if it's only the menu down at the Clatchian Takeaway. I've seen you staring at one line for a minute at a time."
"Well, obviously you can't let people put one over on you," said Colon, sticking out his chest.
Or at least, sticking it further up.
"What you need is an aide-de-camp," said Nobby, lifting his dress to step over a puddle.
"I do?"
"Oh, yes. 'Cause of you being a figurehead and setting an example to your men," said Nobby.
"Ah, right, yes,"
said Colon, grasping the idea with relief.
"A man can't be expected to do all that and read long words, am I right?"
"Exactly. And, of course, we're down one sergeant at the yard now," said Nobby.
"Good point, Nobby. It's going to be busy."
They walked on for a while.
"You could promote someone,"
Nobby prompted.
"Could I?"
"What's the good of being boss if you can't?"
"That's true. And it's sort of an emergency. Any thoughts, Nobby?"
Nobby sighed inwardly. A penny could drop through wet cement faster than it could drop for Fred Colon.
"A name springs to mind," he said.
"Oh, right, yes, yes, Ridge Sue, right? Good at writing, a keen thinker, and of course he's cool-headed," said Colon. "Acey, practically."
"But a bit on the dead side," said Nobby.
"Yes, I suppose that counts against him."
"And he goes to pieces unpredictably," said Nobby.
"That's true," said Captain Colon. "No one likes shaking hands and ending up with more fingers than they started with."
"So perhaps it might be best to consider someone who has been unreasonably overlooked," said Nobby, going for broke. "Someone whose face don't fit, perhaps? Someone whose experience in the watch generally, and in traffic in particular, would be of great service to the city if people wouldn't go on about one or two lapses, which didn't happen in any case."
The dawn of intelligence rose across the vistas of Colon's face.
"Ah," he said, "I see.
Well, why didn't you come right out with that at the start, Nobby?
Well, it's your decision, Fred. I mean, Captain, said Nobby earnestly.
But supposing Mr. Vimes doesn't agree? He'll be back in a couple of weeks.
That'll be long enough, said Nobby.
And you don't mind?
Me? Mind? Not me. You know me, Fred. Always ready to do my bit.
Nobby?
Yes, Fred?
The dress?
Yes, Fred?
I thought we weren't doing the traffic calming any more.
Yes, Fred. But I thought I'd keep it on ready to swing into action, just in case you decided that we should.
A chilly wind blew across the cabbage fields. To Gaspode it brought, besides the overpowering fumes of the cabbage and the dark red smell of the dung carts, hints of pine, mountains, snow, sweat, and stale cigar smoke. The last came from the cartmen's habit of smoking large, cheap cigars. They kept the flies off. It was better than vision. The world of smell stretched before Gaspode.
"My paws hurt," he said.
"There's a good dog," said Carrot.
The road forked. Gaspode stopped and snuffled around.
"Well, here's an interesting thing," he said. "Some of the dungs jumped down off of the cart and eddied away across the fields here. You were right."
"Can you smell water anywhere around?" said Carrot, scanning the flat plain.
Gaspode's mottled nose wrinkled up in effort.
"Pond," he said. "Not very big. About a mile away.
She'll be heading towards it. Very meticulous about cleanliness, Angua. That's not usual in werewolves."
"Never been one for water myself," said Gaspode.
"Is that a fact?"
"Here, no need for that. I had a B-A-T-H once, you know. It's not as if I don't know what it's like."
The pond was in a clump of wind-blown trees. Dry grass rustled in the breeze. A single coot scuttled into the reeds as Carrot and Gaspode approached.
"Yeah, here we are," said Gaspode. "A lot of muck goes in, and—" he sniffed at the stirred-up mud. "Yeah, she comes out."
"Is there a problem?" said Carrot.
"What? Oh, no. Clear scent. Heading for the mountains, just like you said.
Gaspode sat down and scratched himself with a hind leg.
"There's a problem, isn't there?" said Carrot.
"Well, supposing there was something really bad that you wouldn't really want to know, and I knew what it was, how do you feel about me telling you? I mean, some people'd rather not know. It's a personal thing."
"Gaspode."
"She's not alone. There's another wolf."
"Ah."
Carrot's mild, uninformative smile did not change.
Of the male persuasion," said Gaspode. "Boy wolf. Very much so."
"Thank you, Gaspode."
"Extremely male. In a very definite way. Unmistakably."
"Yes, I think I understand."
"And this is just words. In smell, it's a lot more, well, emphatic."
"Thank you for that, Gaspode, and they're heading—"
"Still straight for the mountains, boss,"
said Gaspode, as kindly as he could. He wasn't certain of all the details of human sexual relationships, and the ones he was certain of he still couldn't quite believe, but he knew they were a lot more complicated than those enjoyed by the doggy fraternity.
"This smell?"
"The extremely male one I was talking about."
"The very one, yes," said Carrot, levelly.
"You could still smell it if you were on a horse, could you?"
"I could smell it with my nose in a sack of onions."
"Good, because I think we should move a little faster now."
"Yeah, I thought you'd think that."
Constable Visit saluted when Nobby and Colon entered Pseudopolis Yard.
"I thought you ought to know about this right away, sir," he said, flourishing a piece of paper. "I just got it off Rodney."
"Who?"
"The imp on the bridge, sir. He paints pictures of carts going too fast."
"No one had been feeding him," Visit added in a mildly accusing tone.
"Oh, someone's speeding," said Colon.
"So?"
He looked again.
"That's one of those sedan chairs the deep-down dwarfs use, isn't it? Them trolls must have been moving."
"It was just after the scone was stolen," said Visit. "Rodney writes the time in the corner, see? A bit odd, I thought. Like a kind of getaway vehicle, sir?"
"What did a dwarf want to steal a worthless lump of rock for?"
said Colon.
"Especially them dark dwarfs. They give me the creeps in those stupid clothes they wear."
Angry silence rang like a dropped girder in a temple. There were three dwarfs in the room.
"You two, you want me out on patrol," barked Sergeant Strong in the arm. "I've got business down at Chitterlin Street."
All three dwarfs marched out, somehow contriving even to walk angrily.
"Well, what was that about?" said Fred Colon. "Bit touchy, aren't they? Mr. Vimes says that sort of thing all the time, and no one minds.
Yeah, but that's because he's Sam Vimes, said Nobby.
Oh, and are you inferring I'm not? Said Captain Colon.
Well, yes, Fred. You're Fred Colon, said Nobby patiently.
Oh, I am I?
Yes, Captain Colon.
And they'd better bloody remember it, Colon snapped. I'm not a soft touch me. I'm not going to take insubordination like that. I've always said Vimes was a bit too soft on those dwarfs. They gets the same pay as us, and they're only half the size.
Yes, yes, said Nobby, waving his hands placatingly in a desperate attempt to calm things down. But, Fred, trolls are twice as big as us, and they get paid the same, so it...
But they've only got a quarter of the brains, so it's just the same, like I said.
The noise they heard was long and drawn out and menacing. It was the sound of Lance Constable Blue John's chair being pushed back. The floor creaked as he shambled past Colon, removed his helmet from its peg with one enormous hand and headed for the door.
"Going on patrol," he mumbled.
"You're not on patrol for another hour," said Constable Visit.
"Going now," said Blue John.
The room was darkened for a moment as he eclipsed the doorway, and then he was gone.
"Why is everyone so titchy all of a sudden?" said Colon.
The remaining constables tried not to catch his eye.
"Did I hear someone snigger?" he demanded.
"I didn't hear anyone snigger, Sarge," said Nobby.
"Oh? Oh, you think I'm a sergeant, do you, Corporal Nobbs?"
"No, Fred, I... Oh, gods!"
"I can see things have got pretty slack around here," said Captain Colon,
an evil little gleam in his eye.
"I bet you were all thinking, oh, it's only fat old Fred Colon. It's all going to be gravy from now on, eh?"
"Oh, no, Fred. No one thinks you're old... Oh, gods!"
"Just fat, eh?"
Fred glowered around the room. Suddenly, and against all previous evidence, everyone was vitally interested in their paperwork.
"Right. Well, from now on, things are going to be different," said Captain Colon. "Oh, yes, I'm on to all your little tricks. Who said that?"
"Said what, Captain?"
said Nobby, who'd also heard the little whispered, "We learned them all from you, Sarge," but at this moment would eat live coals rather than admit it.
"Someone said something, blotto voice," said Captain Colon.
"I'm sure they didn't, Captain," said Nobby.
"And I won't be eyeballed like that, neither."
"No one's looking at you," wailed Nobby.
"Ha-ha! You think I don't know that one?" Colon shouted. "There's plenty of ways to eyeball someone without looking at them, Corporal. That man over there is earlobing me."
"I think Constable Ping is just really interested in the report he's writing, Fred, Sir, Captain."
Colon's ruffled feathers settled a little.
"Well, all right. And now I'm going up to my office, all right? There'll be some changes around here. And someone bring me a cup of tea."
They watched him go up the stairs, enter the office, and slam the door.
"Well, that..."
Constable Ping began, but Nobby, who had a lot more experience of the Colon personality, waved one hand frantically for silence, while he held the other one to his ear very theatrically. Then they all heard the door click open again, quietly.
"A change is as good as a rest, I suppose," said Constable Ping.
"As the prophet Osri says, better an ox in the potter's fields of Hashiba than a sandal in the wine presses of Gash," said Constable Visit.
"Yes, so I've heard," said Nobby. "Well, I'll just make him his tea. Everyone feels better after a cup of tea."
A couple of minutes later the constables heard Colon shouting, even through the door,
"What is wrong with this mug, Corporal?"
"Nothing, sir. It's your mug. You always have your tea in it."
"Ah, but you see, it is a sergeant's mug, Corporal, and what is it that officers drink out of?"
"Well, Carrot and Mr. Vimes have got their own mugs."
"No, they may choose to drink out of mugs, Corporal, but watch regulations say officers have a cup and saucer. Says so right here, Regulation 301, subsection C. Do you understand me?"
"I don't think we've got any."
"You know where the petty cash is. Usually you're the only person that does. You're dismissed, Corporal."
Nobby came down the stairs, white-faced, holding the offending receptacle. The door opened again.
"And none of you are to gobbin it, neither," shouted Colon. "I know that one, and it's to be stirred with a spoon, understand? I know that one too."
The door slammed. Constable Visit took the mug from Nobby's shaking hand and patted him on the shoulder. "Chalky the Troll does some very good seconds, I understand," he began. The door opened.
"Bloody China, too!"
The door slammed.
"Anyone seen the petty cash lately?"
said Constable Ping. Nobby reached mournfully into his pocket and pulled out some dollars. He handed them to Visit.
"Better go to that posh shop in King's Way," he said. "Get one of those cups and saucers thin enough to see through, you know, with gold round the rim."
He looked round at the other constables.
"What are you lot doing here? You won't catch any criminals in here." "Does the petty cash count, Nobby?" said Ping. "Don't you nobby me, Ping. You just get out there, and the rest of you."
Days rolled by. More accurately, they rattled by. It was a comfortable coach as coaches went, and as coaches on this road went over continual potholes, it swayed and rocked like a cradle. Initially the motion was soothing. After a day or two it palled. So did the scenery. Vimes stared glumly out of the window. There was another Clax Tower on the horizon. They were putting them near the road, he recalled, even though that wasn't the direct route. Only a fool would build them across the Badlands. You had to remember sometimes that within a few hundred miles of Ankh-Morpork, there were still trolls who hadn't caught on to the fact that humans weren't digestible. Besides, most of the settlements were near the road. The new guild must be coining money. Even from here he could see the scaffolding, as workers feverishly attached still more gantries and paddles to the main tower. The whole thing would likely be matchsticks after the next hurricane, but by then the owners would have probably earned enough to build another 5, or 50. It had all happened so fast. Who'd have believed it? But all the components had been there for years. Semaphore was ancient. A century ago the watch had used a few towers to relay messages to patrolling officers. And gargoyles had nothing to do all day but sit and watch things, and usually were too unimaginative to make mistakes. What had happened was that people thought differently about news now. Once upon a time, they'd have used something like this to relay information about troop movements and the death of kings. True, those were the things that people needed to know, but they didn't need to know them every day. No, what they needed to know every day were things like, how much are cattle selling for in Ankh-Morpork today? Because if they weren't fetching much, maybe it was better to drive them to Querm instead. People needed to know these little things. Lots and lots of little things. Little things like, did my ship get there safely? That's why the guild was driving hell-bent across the mountains onto Genua, 4,000 miles away. It took many months for a ship to round Cape Terror. How much exactly would a trader pay to know within a day when it had arrived? And how much the cargo was worth? Had it been sold? Was there credit to the trader's name in Ankh-Morpork? Coining money? Oh, yes. And it had caught on as fast as every other craze did in the big city. It seemed as though everybody who could put together a pole, a couple of gargoyles, and some second-hand windmill machinery was in on the business. You couldn't go out to dinner these days without seeing people nip out of the restaurant every 5 minutes to check that there weren't any messages for them on the nearest pole. As for those who cut out the middleman and signalled directly to their friends across a crowded room, causing mild contusions to those nearby... Vimes shook his head. That was messages without meaning. Telepathy without brains. But it had been good, hadn't it, last week? When Don't Know Jack had pinched that silver in Stolat and then galloped at speed to the Sanctuary of the Shades in Ankh-Morpork, and Sergeant Edge of the Stolat Watch, who trained under Vimes, had put a message on the Clax, which arrived on Vimes's desk more than an hour before Jack sauntered through the city gates and into the waiting embrace of Sergeant Detritus. Legally, it had been a bit tricky, since the offence hadn't been committed on Ankh-Morpork soil, and a semaphore message did not, strictly speaking, come under the heading of hot pursuit. But Jack had kindly resolved that one by taking a wild swing at the troll, resulting in his arrest for assault on a watch officer, and treatment for a broken wrist. There was a gentle snore from Lady Sybil. A marriage is always made up of two people who are prepared to swear that only the other one snores. Inigo Skimmer was hunched in a corner reading a book. Vimes watched him for some time. "I'm just going up top for some air," he said at last, opening the door. The clattering of the wheels filled the tiny hot space and dust blew in. "Your Grace," Inigo began, standing up. Vimes, already clambering up the side of the coach, stuck his head back in. "You're not making any friends with that attitude," he said, and kicked the door shut with his foot. Cheery and Detritus had made themselves comfortable on the roof. It was a lot less stuffy, and at least there was a view, if vegetables were your idea of a panorama. Vimes worked himself into a niche between two bundles and leaned towards Cheery. "You know about the Clax, right?" he said. "Well, sort of, sir." "Good." Vimes passed her a piece of paper. "There's bound to be a tower near where we stop tonight.
Cipher this and send it to the watch, will you? They ought to be able to turn it around in an hour if they ask the right people. Tell them to try Washable Topsy, she does the laundry there, or Gilbert Gilbert, he always seems to know what's going on.
Cheery read the message and then stared at Vimes.
Are you sure, sir? She said.
Maybe. Make sure you send a description. Names don't mean much.
May I ask what makes you think?
His walk.
And he didn't catch an orange,
said Vimes.